Welcome to Cloud Foundry Weekly, your source for all things Cloud Foundry. This week's episode, we will dive into Tanzu Application Service 6.0 with Michael Cote. Please enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cloud Foundry Weekly, another episode. I believe the date is April the 11th, and I think we just finally, after six tries in a row, got the StreamYard intro right. So hopefully that all looks good for y'all. But today, we have a very special celebrity guest star. Michael Cote is joining us. Our friend Nikki Pike is on vacation this week, so Cote will be our guest star and interview. I guess they'll interview me a little bit, and we can talk about the topic of the day. Of we're going to unbox and unpack the latest release of the Tanzu Application Service 6.0, which is the commercialized Cloud Foundry distribution from Tanzu. So Cote, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I'm glad I could step in because I know that you need to have a equally bearded co-host with similar coloration. Except I've spread mine out on the rest of my face instead of downward.
I would say your beard is a little bit more impressive, but I don't know if you've seen Nikki's beard. It's awesome.
That's what I meant. You needed a substitute.
Oh yes, this is true.
To fill your two quota.
So cool. Do you want to give the listeners a little bit of intro about yourself in case for some while they don't know who you are and what you do type of thing?
Well, as mentioned, I'm Cote. I work with Nick here in Tanzu land. And I started working in the Cloud Foundry Tanzu world back in 2015 at Pivotal. And I've always been on the developer relations team. There was a point in time where it was just the tech marketing group, but whatever. And I've done that for most of the time that I've been here. And I don't actually like do really any technical stuff. I more talk with management types and executives, and people are interested in changing how they do their work day to day, what the DevOps people would call culture, and doing that transformation stuff like that, plus whatever else. So I'm always get excited about a new Tanzu application service release. See what's in there.
No, it's a bunch of good stuff for sure. So, I should have gave you a heads up, but if you've seen the show before, you know that we ask every guest, if they remember their first CF push, and if not, do you remember your first kind of interaction with Cloud Foundry in general, and like what was that experience for you? So,
well, to reword your question, I don't think I remember the first. But the first one that I do remember is, I think when I started, we went, I went out to, I guess it was not, well, it was, the Bay Area. And then we went to whatever offices Pivotal was in down there. Mm-hmm. I forget which one it was. And I was there with Andrew Schaefer, my boss at the time.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And we went into a new hire training or something. And we hung out in there for a while. And just kind of watch demos and stuff and then left. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure we saw something there. I think, what was the guy's name? I forget what his name was. He was like a Brazilian sales engineer. He was around for a long time. I forget who he was, but he was fun. I think he was giving the demo.
Nice.
And other things like that.
Well, very cool. Yeah, I think the first to have your first demo or experience it with Andrew Clay Schaefer. So that's I believe that's who you're referencing. So he's even started some of the OG Cloud Foundry podcast back in the day.
And now that you're reminding me, I was an industry analyst a couple of times and I haven't gone back and looked at my notes, but I'm pretty sure I was briefed about Cloud Foundry back when it was started at VMware. So I don't know if they demoed it or something, but I probably was shown that kind of stuff some time ago.
Yeah. So you go way back for sure. Cool. So shout out to Keith here. Always joining the show. So thanks for joining and thanks for the live streamers and viewers. And if you do have questions as we go through some of the conversation, please post comments and we'll try to answer them live, or at least I'll do my best to do that. And we have a little some demos for the live streamers, and try to best to word that back for people listening on the podcast. But do you want to get into it here?
Yeah, let's unbox it. What is it? A brown box? White box?
I thought about like having some type of physical box here to like, you know, like have that animation or whatever. But yeah. I thought that's
old. Well, how about in the box of your mind, Nick?
Yes.
Like when you're on your desk and you've got that top sound camera view of your perfectly manicured nails.
Yeah.
You're up on the mic and you're like, okay, well, the first thing is wonderfully done box. I'm going to open it here. I've got my box. Like, what does this box look like? Do we have, is it standard Amazon box with some brown tape?
No. So if you ever had opened or consumed or, purchased any Ubiquiti Networks gear, they make the best boxes. Like, they're like very clean and crisp. Like they have, I could have thought of this, but they even like, you know, so they make like network gear, right? And I have a bunch of network gear from Ubiquiti in my home lab, and, you know, a lot of home labbers and, you know, folks do. But they even ship like the screws and like rack nuts that come with like the network devices, like an individual little like crisp plastic packaging and everything. It's very well done, like way over the top for, you know, just like, here's your switch or here's your router type of thing. But
because they know that the people they're getting it because they're crafters. They're it's like the people who buy like the premium flour at the store instead of just like the flour on the bottom shelf of the grocery store.
Yeah.
Like me, I'd just be like, I don't know, it's flour.
Yeah. But, no.
Well, my vision is, the only thing I've got in my head is like, you know, you've got those boxes that like they somehow, the air in them has suctioned them shut. So you've almost got to like get your fingernails under the lid and kind of shake it so that it falls out. But this is one of those boxes that like, it doesn't do that. It just has a little thing. And you can just lift the lid out.
Oh, right out. And then go ahead.
It's got that crisp ozone-y smell in the air from the factory.
For sure. Yeah. And the labels have like the pre-indented like pull here. So you just get a crisp, clean like opening. You don't have to go like searching for like a box cutter or scissors or anything like that. So
right. And I think there's also a chocolate bar.
Yes. Inside. Oh yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. It's very well packaged for software for sure.
Yep.
Anyway, I think we well covered the unboxing there. What were we talking about again? Yeah, 6.0. What's in it here? Let's see.
What's in the box? That's what matters now.
Yeah, yes, yes. So let's see here. I'm actually pulling up the blog here. We can I'll paste the link in here in case anyone wants to check it out too, or kind of follow along as we go through here. But kind of the first, I guess, area that we want to cover. Myself and Long and a lot of other folks now have been working on something called Gen AI for Tains Application Service, and it's in beta right now. But like, we're kind of, you know, there's a big ecosystem around TAS here at Tanzu, and when we have these big releases, we like to kind of cover updates and some of the other kind of like add-on tiles as well. But I wanted to bring in what we're doing or updates to. What's new with the Gen AI tile and beta program? Because if you've seen any kind of industry show or any kind of IT thing right now, it's how many times can you say Gen AI or put AI on things to bolster maybe YouTube algorithms and or just everybody is real into AI right now. So
I know you and I talk about it all the time. I'm basically just like, I can't get this thing to be a dungeon master for me. Dragons.
Yeah. And so
can Taz help? Like, does it have the algorithms?
Yes. So I think we have made a lot of progress there, and we'll have a new demo app that we want to show. Now, it's not Dungeons and Dragons yet, but
the potential's there.
Oh yes. Yes. Like we can, we'll get into that, but you'll see where we could easily, we could make it a Kote themed Dungeons and Dragons for sure. Before we kind of get into some of the demos around this, I like to just call it some of the highlights here. So like, this started back at the hackathon last year in the Explore Las Vegas show. And then we kind of continued it forward till now, which is what, April 2024 or whatever. That's right. Yeah, whatever the date is. I said it earlier in the show. But when we first started, right, our story around like vSphere in general was still a little new, just because, you know, it was a lot easy to start and, fire up a cloud account and get immediate access to maybe some GPUs and things. So we started, we had a real deep dive on this whole topic on episode two. So if you don't know, you haven't seen episode two yet, check out episode two to get some extra primer. If you're listening or watching, that'll help out too. But we needed to build some additional support for things and really kind of work to use some of these larger, more, let's just say, beefy enterprise grade NVIDIA GPUs. So that is all kind of been covered and wrapped up. So that's, we'll have a demo today using multiple profiles from a 100. So we were very fortunate to find a friend in Tanzu Labs, and he was able to loan us his A100 that he had, and he's actually been helping a lot too. So David, if you're watching, big props for that, because that really helped us out. And we've also certified Azure support as well. So we kind of completes the trifecta of the large hyperscalers. So if you're in the hyperscalers, you can use this service. If you're on premises on vSphere, you can, obviously use the service as well. And multi-model support. So when we first started out, we were running like a singular model. And as we kind of progressed, we saw the need and the opportunity to add additional models behind the scenes. So you can do kind of multiple use cases, perhaps, do some code generation and run a model that's geared towards code generation, or run a model that's geared towards chat or chatbots, maybe even run a model that's just geared for running embeddings as well. So, we have multi-models support going, and we'll dig into that too.
And I would add, this is where my experience, my almost 7 months experience playing Dungeons and Dragons, I think pays off for my professional context. It's like, I could totally see how you would want multiple models, because some of the models you want to be like big and ponderous and serious. Mm-hmm. And the other ones, you're just like, I just want to roll some dice, which you don't really need a model for. But you could have a model for just like checking regulations, or just checking something that was kind of simple and doing some basic inferring. And you wouldn't need it to be super fast or big. So it could be cheaper. And then you could, by instead of just using one type of model, if you can divide it into different ones, even regardless of what it's good or bad at, you can just, it's good to specialize to what it's good at, but you can do a bunch of cost savings with it, right? And I think that's a major thing if you're going to be doing your own enterprise AI, is it's one thing for us consumers to pay I forget how many euros it is, but $25 a month to get ChatGPT and we're sort of done. But it's a whole, the amount of money you're going to pay for this stuff when you're doing it on your own is a whole other, a huge thing probably to manage that. I was thinking, with public cloud, that was kind of a nightmare for a decade.
Right.
figuring out cost management. Now it's sort of been solved. So don't do that next time. It's good to have multiple models.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, and we can kind of show that as well. So that's kind of a high level, functionality updates with the tile here. So now let's I guess get into this here. We can start having some fun with AI, right? So let me bring my screen up here if I can. Do a present. Maybe.
Since you've built your own home AI lab stuff, how many GPU cards are out there? Are there and I don't mean physically, I mean types. Are there hundreds of them that you would want to integrate with? Or are there basically no, there's just four. These are the only four that matter.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no, that's an interesting topic, right? So, we've got Inception going on here. Sorry about that. In terms of what's available in the market today, right? So obviously NVIDIA is, leading the pack. so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. They just had their conference not too long ago, and they announced the next series of I don't even know what they're measuring something in flops, and I don't know what variant of flops they're using, but Jensen got out there and we're announcing the new super duper rack of the bajillion GPUs, right? Like that type of thing. So obviously that type of situation, you're probably spending millions of dollars to buy one of those, and I don't know, that's more of a high performance compute / pure data scientist play type of thing. Mm. Well beyond the I am an enterprise application developer and I need to interface with the LLM type of thing. But on the kind of what's available out there. So we've done a lot of things with some older cards, the NVIDIA Tesla T4, that seems to be available pretty much in all the providers. And we have some in a VMware lab as well. I have some at home. I've also picked up some, Tesla P40s, which are kind of an older, but still checkout model. And, that seems to be if you look at the hobbyist and home labber scenario, the P40 is pretty popular. And, the 3090 series, that is like a consumer card. It's like a 3090 is the optimal card, but obviously if you can get a 3090 Ti, that's pretty good. That seems to be a pretty good sweet spot in terms of price to performance. And I recently acquired some 3090 Ti's for my local micro center, so I've got those wired up as well. So I'm essentially acquiring everything possible. But as we start to get into some of these higher end GPUs, right, they are very much still capacity constrained. So that's why, we found a friend here, and we're borrowing his lab for the A100 use. But even though you try to go provision an A100 and an H100 in a lot of the cloud providers, and it gets into pre-reserve your reserve instance and we'll let you know when it's ready in a year type of thing. So definitely some of these higher end GPUs are kind of hard to come by, but I think we'll show that we can do some pretty cool things on relatively low, a low number and lower powered cards that are more, I guess, more available and accessible to folks who want to try this out and that type of thing. So that was kind of a long winded answer. I don't know if that, I'm not sure, just kind of ranted about cards or whatever, but
yeah, I think that's perfect, right? Because that's the thing with having the AI stuff in Tanzu application service that I'm always wrapping my head around is what do you do with that? But you got to manage it, right? Like if you're going to be running it on your own, otherwise, why would you have it, right?
Right.
You would just use one of the something that's available, and so there's all these other considerations, and so therefore, what you need a platform to do, and so as you were just saying, you need pretty wide GPU compatibility, both low and high, whatever you can get your hands on. And then I suspect in the future, maybe when capacity fixes itself or is fixed, mm-hmm. you will be able to want to just shift it around, Now we've got all new cards, run the same stuff.
Right.
That's my simplistic understanding of how this all works.
It's very much it's just a new resource, right? So you have CPU, memory, and I think we might have lost Kote there for a second. But yeah, we'll keep on trucking here. Let's bring him back. All right, we lost you for a second. You there?
That's okay. I'm here. Everything's fine. Don't worry about me.
All right. Okay. All right. So yeah, just consider a GPU another resource that for a long point in time, I think in the enterprise data center wasn't really, it was if we're going to do VDI, we need the GPUs, right? Because we're going to, virtualize a bunch of desktops and desktops, you need some, each of those need a little bit of graphics, right? But then now I start doing the AI, ML, kind of resurgence of generative AI. Everyone's like, yeah, we probably need to get GPUs now and see where that goes. So that being said, I think we can kind of get into what we got. And here on the screen, this is a new application running on our GenAI for TAS. And what this is, right? So it is a kind of simulated, the retrieval augmented generation app, almost like a, I think ChatGPT calls these like custom GPTs or whatever, perhaps, or maybe it's a similar concept.
Yeah,
or whatever.
You make your own GPT. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So anywho, this app pulls all of the Cloud Foundry open source docs, right? And then stores those as embeddings to kind of help the model, because we're pulling these models right off the shelf from the open source community. So behind the scenes, this is running Mistral, right, for the kind of inferencing, and we're actually then running another model for the embedding as well. So, and I think one thing too that I didn't mention, so we added VLLM support too. So we use FastChat behind the scenes, and then you can add combine FastChat and VLLM to run these models. But VLLM is it improves overall performance, but then it kind of doesn't support the embeddings as well. And that's why we're loading the additional embedding model too. And that kind of like splits the load out of the two models and kind of helps the overall process. But we can go ahead and click configure here. And so now we have a chatbot here, but it's been highly optimized to be Cloud Foundry aware. We can start asking questions. And if you're watching on the live stream, you want us to ask questions, we'll try to accommodate the requests, assuming they are good to go. All right. So I like to, I don't know about you, but I like to ask the AIs. Let me command plus is a little bit more, perhaps. It's going to be maybe too much. But the AIs, who are you? Right? I don't know. The different models get a little sassy, and they respond different things.
Who's so asking?
Yeah. So who are you? So we're running.
So this is the fast chat interface we're seeing here.
So this is an actual application that's built on top of Cloud Foundry tasks, right?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
We're interfacing to that the service bindings, right? So like, we've seen this before, but if you're not familiar with it, right? Cloud Foundry has this great marketplace concept. You can add services to your apps and bind them really quickly. We've already, deployed this app. It's bound to the Gen AI service. I believe it's also using Postgres as well for the vector store. So, So who are you? It gave me a little bit. I'm an assistant designed to help answer queries based on the provided context data. Now, I asked it the same question earlier, and it gave like a really awesome response. And I'm a little upset with this response, but it was like, I am admin. I am, anyway.
It's going to have a little identity crisis in the second sentence. It doesn't really know who or what I am.
Yes. Therefore, I can answer the query who you are. Who are you? Right. Yeah. So that aside, we've identified that it's an AI, right? So this is like designed to be kind of like a, how do we, Can this be helpful to, people to learn about Cloud Foundry or, Cloud Foundry administrators help, augment, questions or like, let's just say, how do I deploy an application?
And so is this included in the box? Once you've unboxed it, you can just start this up through
I mean, this would be just another application you deploy.
But you can just get it off the shelf and get going.
Yeah. Right. So like we don't have this code yet up on. I have an example repo of our demo apps for this. So we don't have that up yet on GitHub. But I think we're working on moving that over soon. So that should be available here shortly to if you want to pull this code specifically and run it on your thing. All right. Okay. How do you see a push? Okay. Let's see. How do I? Let's ask it like a pretty generic question here. Title. Event. All right. So this is a pretty deep question here, and you can tell like this is really referencing the Cloud Foundry docs behind the scene, because if you just ask a generic model, right, if you ask ask Mistral what a CPU entitlement and not give it any kind of context around Cloud Foundry. I don't know what would respond, but I doubt it would respond this, right? This is a very clean answer. So, you know, CPU entitlement refers to the percentage of the host CPU, specific app instance, and is entitled to in the Cloud Foundry. In Cloud Foundry, you can use the CPU entitlement plugin. You know, it kind of goes into this. So, like, and I'm reading this, and I'm pretty sure this is pretty good here. So, like, it's spot on, right? Talking about Diego cells, experimental CPU throttling. So this is very much a very, you know, I don't, like showing the power of, you know, we've kind of
customizing it.
Yeah, customizing it to be a very specific chatbot, right, type of thing.
Right. Otherwise, it would just said it's like, you know, this feeling that the CPU has that it's more important than the memory or the networking.
The CPU is more entitled to power than, you know, the GPU or something like that. I don't know.
It's very hungry.
Yes. Yeah. All right. What else? So I'm going to then ask it, what is Apps Manager? Right. And this will be interesting because this is using Apps Manager is a concept in cloud for managing apps. Okay. And using CFCLI for App Manager allows update and configure apps to get reproducibly. Apps Manager also enables features like blue green deployment and routing. Yeah. So there we go. If we have any live viewers want to post a question, we could ask that too, but I don't know how long we want to just ask questions to this, but while we're here, I can go over to my other screen here. Let me command plus this here too, but this is kind of showing what's going on behind the scenes in Ops Manager here, where we're using the Mistral 7B instruct model. So like that's what we're pulling, you know, from Hugging Face. We have additional model names. So all these LLMs get spun up via fast chat. And then we have an open AI, like compatible API that kind of serves them. And as that broker calls, it knows how to route to the appropriate model. The BGE-M3 is the embedding model. So those are just kind of like these additional models you can use. And then they're all kind of running behind the scenes to help kind of make this all kind of work, so to speak. And I believe, let's see here.
So how did you add in all the Cloud Foundry specific stuff?
So this application is actually pulling the OSS docs like from, you know, like the internet and then like storing them as embeddings.
I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, that's like the app, I like all the services, they let you do this, but I just want, I want my, whatever app I'm using, I want to just like point it to a directory and say, use those files. Yeah. Like just, I, you know, and I don't know what that means, but that's what I need.
Yeah. So
the various AIs are surprisingly hit or miss about that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. So I think too, maybe if we get new iterations here, so you could say select knowledge base, right? Well, maybe down the road you could have like a custom knowledge base on this app, and then you could say read the, you know, PDFs or documents from this you know directory or place, you know, internal in your organization, right? Maybe it's like a HR policies documents or I don't know.
I feel like that like if you had the Tanzu application service running and you mm-hmm. had this going, and then you could just like have a directory you pointed at and refresh it. That would take care of 15 to 90 days of your hair on fire. We got to have an AI strategy. Like, look, we got this thing here and it's all under our control. We can use the hardware that we have mm-hmm. and we can customize it with our stuff and you get this experience. And then you could start to just experiment with it on your own with knowing that it wasn't, you know, shooting around everywhere and doing things. And it would also be great because it would be simple enough that, you know, you could just have the kind of managers and executives farting around with it instead of having to just have it be like programmer mm-hmm. showing you screenshots. They could actually start to understand what you could do with it.
Like, hey boss, here's the AI link. We checked the box. High five. Let's go. Right.
Yeah. We know you need an AI strategy and you're not quite sure what that means. So here, take a look at this. See if we can figure it out.
Yeah. And it's all within the data center. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Everything's fine. Right. Yeah. So I think, you can kind of see where we're going with this. And a lot of this too is just to help, help show that, you know, the power or you know, what's possible with it, and
the potential, you know, the abilities. Potential.
Yeah, the abilities, you know, the like, you know, just
the dreams.
Yes, dreams, hopes, everything. So that's kind of like our multi-model, you know, embedded RAG demo, right? We do RAG, and like if you've seen the Taylor Swift demo where you can add the album on the fly, and that's doing retrieval augmented generation too, kind of on the fly with Postgres. But that's all kind of like, you know, in a potential business use case, you would have kind of this like kind of, you know, collected chatbot thing, right? And you maybe not want to have it, you know, be able to be manipulated with new information by anybody in your company, which, you know, where could, how could that go wrong, type of thing. So anywho.
You know, like I was saying earlier, I've been trying to like theorize like what enterprise AI would be. And I bet you're kind of hitting on one that I think would be it, which is like, not it, but an example. One thing would be, you probably would want to trace, you'd probably want to save this entire chat session and then have saved the metadata of what, I don't even know the words for this, what state of the AI you were using at the time. So like, which customizations had been added to it, what files were in there, so that if you had to go back and look through it, you could be like, oh, this is the one that we did it on March 27th versus the one that we did on March 28th. And you would know, like, it's almost like if you're debugging an application in production, it's pretty handy to know which version of the application you're running. And like, similarly, you'd probably want to track that here, which you would have access to if you control the whole thing.
Right. Exactly. Okay, so we've done that. I was going to show real quick here some of the vSphere things too, if anyone's interested in that. Let's see. So here's kind of like the secret sauce, or really the extra special things we did with vSphere and with Bosch specifically, because, you know, when we started this, you know, Bosch couldn't provide or couldn't provision GPUs and didn't know how to really kind of talk with these things. So this is, you know, we're slicing up this grid A100, you know, this NVIDIA A100. You can do different profiles. So this is using a good chunk of it. So this is the inference LLM running 20 gigs of RAM. But then also we have this other one running a five gig slice. So like, you know, we're taking a 40 gig GPU and slicing it up in different pieces, and that's the embedding model, right? So you could also then too, like, oh, you know, we need another little model. You know some of these models are quite small and they're like quite specific, and you could, you know, you could carve up, you know, a single GPU into multiple models and, you know, save money that way as well, that type of thing. So that was just kind of, you know, that was a big effort of work to do and get working. And, you know, if you like to see vSphere behind the scenes, there we go.
Now you've seen it.
Yes, exactly. All righty. Let's see what else. Let's see. So the app autoscaler here, I'll take my screen away for a bit. If I can do it. Do I do that? All right, here we go. What is new? One of the, you know, other, you know, kind of large features that we're going to talk about, you know, obviously the Gen AI stuff plays into like that developer experience and to some degree the, you know, the platform engineering experience as well, because we're kind of enabling platform engineers to, you know, rapidly onboard on this too. But if you used the app autoscaler before, right, we're going to have a tale of two autoscalers, right? So Diego, right, is the container scheduler for Cloud Foundry and Taz. And when you push an app, it gets, you know, magic happens with build packs, and then it lands in Diego, a container's built for you. You just sent source code and just all happened, right? But, you know, as you deploy, you know, apps, you might want to, you know, configure autoscaler, which like watches your app for different things and lets you go, you know, scale up and down. And a common, you know, potential use case, or you would think, is that you would want to use, you know, autoscale based on CPU usage. And we've had that for a while, but because of how Diego worked, it was a little wonky from a metric perspective. You would see things like, you know, thousands of percentages and things like that. And it was just, like CPU autoscaler was could be a little bit not as reliable just because of the way how Diego is very like provisions, you know, you allocate memory and disk space on a cell from an application. There's no like, I want to reserve five CPUs too, because it's all doing kind of a, you know, orchestrated time sharing on the, you know, usually hundreds of cells behind a single Cloud Foundry deployment. So there's this newer metric called CPU entitlement, which is a much cleaner way to scale based on actual CPU usage. There's a lot of work to go into 6.0 to update that and make that a better experience for the developer. So I'll go back to my screen here.
So then other than the numbers being funny, as you were saying, like what problem is that causing when have better control over how much, how scaling happened?
Yeah, it was more about like there's just a lot of confusion too, because it would be like, all right, well, you would need like, and like, you know, I used to be a platform engineer at a, you know, large company, and I had a, you know, one of my coworkers that we would always be like in like lunch and learns with our development community, and it would always come up, be like, hey, how do I use CPU usage with App Autoscaler? How does this work? Well, but it would actually go into like the concept of like, well, it depends how many like CPUs or vCPUs you have running on each cell, because that changes that threshold. Because like if you have an 8 CPU system or a 12 CPU or 16, that those numbers, it could be like your app's using 1600%. Like, well, what does that mean? Like, well, it's like, it was always a little kind of just confusing, right? But this is more of a resetting at a level of like in the 100% range, and like I want to, you know, scale from like 30 to 80, like type thing. And it's just it's a little cleaner and a little bit easier to maintain, and more it's a more reliable metric from a CPU perspective to rely on versus the traditional metric there.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's a if you're out there and you've used this before, you know what I'm talking about, that type of thing. So this is very Cloud Foundry specific conversation in terms of this autoscaler. So anywho, let's get my screen back at stage. All right. So let's see here. I believe this is a foundation. This is a 4.0 foundation. So it has not been updated. It is just hanging out here. So I have this, we have an app deployed. It's got two instances. We have auto scaling. Let's see, we could maybe talk about this here a little bit or zoom it in. And then we have auto scaling activated, right? So, you know, you've seen this before. No big deal. But then, you know, you can have your mins and maximums. You know, you can scale up and down by certain percentages, that type of thing. But this is where you get into like, what do you want to do, right? Like, how do you, you know, how should we, you know, or how should the autoscaler manage your application and watch for things, right? So this is all kind of like the old view and way here. So you can go to add role and like, you know, I want to do based on CPU processor utilization. And you would have this, you know, these thresholds here. And typically, like, you know, maybe you would have, you know, maybe these be like 200 or 800, depending on the threads or the CPUs on your system. But honestly, most people would like scale off other metrics, and that's okay. Like, you know, like a RabbitMQ queue depth or like HTTP response latency. You can emit custom app metrics. So like, if it's like however many you know, loans I processed or whatever, and it's like, oh, I'm processing like a lot of loan requests, I need to scale up more. Like I just did 100 requests in a minute, go more, right? So
because you only need to change your CPU scale up or down if something is going wrong.
Or if
something's going right, and therefore you can like shut things down to save money, right? So you would want to use external things. Like it might actually be cool that it's running at like 200 or, you know, whatever. But you need to figure out what's going on, what the exogenous things are.
Exactly. All right. So now this is like, you know, the, like, let's say the old view, right? If we flip over here, ooh, hopefully I don't time out of this. So this is another foundation. This is running 6.0. And we'll, let me refresh this to get back in here. All right. So we'll load this up. And then we'll go back to the, you know, this is another app. It's got auto-scaling activated. Okay. So now here we can see, right, CPU entitlement utilization. So if you, if you're using, the app's using like below 30%, you know, start scaling down. If it's using 80% of its entitlement, start scaling up, right? So that's this new, this new metric here. And even like I did a demo and some talks when 3.0 came out, right? So, you know, a few releases ago now, CPU entitlement was as newer then, and they, you know, they had, there's a new feature that was added then about like over entitlement, where you could enforce, you know, if you had a bunch of apps that were consuming, you know, just pegging the cell, they're consuming over their entitlement. And then they, you know, they're like, they're kind of a bad actor, but then that would like potentially throttle them down if you had a good app that wasn't just constantly thrashing the CPU. So that was, you know, maybe some of the start of this work way back then. I looked that video up. It was like, I think 2022. I was like, man, that seems like forever ago. But anyway, yeah.
Well, y'all should do you should do an episode here just going over this.
Yes,
that would be fun. Just like fine tuning your auto scaling.
Oh yeah, yes, that. yeah.
That's a good idea. Experts come in, or mm-hmm. have so, they don't have to be experts, just helpful. Have someone come in and go over it. Yeah,
there are definitely experts that we could bring in here for sure. But anywho, we're using the CPU entitlement metric, which is a much more reliable metric than the, you know, the traditional Cloud Foundry CPU utilization. If we go to add role here, right, we can see that this UI has actually changed as well, right? So, you know, the CPU processor utilization has been deprecated or going to be deprecated and kind of like, hey, use this new entitlement. So this is the entitlement across the app instances. And it's just basically if you're just using CPU to schedule to rely on autoscaler, entitlement is a much more reliable metric to use out of the system. Now, of course, then too, we have all of our other custom things you can do. You know, if you want to emit a custom app metrics that's about the loans processed, you know, per minute or whatever, you can scale off that and that type of thing. So anywho, that is at a nutshell. It doesn't seem like a whole lot, but the platform engineers out there will, I think, really appreciate that. And it'll be a whole lot easier to kind of, you know, from a development community use that too. Cause you just get some really kind of funky numbers there, and you'd have to get explain it like, well, no, this foundation's at 16 vCPU and this one's at 8, so this is why they look different, and this is why you can't scale off that type of thing. Anyway, all right, so that is the wrap up for the autoscaler here. No questions here. Okay, carry on. Let's see. I guess I can take my screen away for a bit.
Now, how about this zone aware stuff? That sounds like another like thing you discover after a while, is that like you want, when you're routing around the traffic between your different parts of your apps or your services, it would be cool if it was like, oh, it's right over there next door. I'll just go there and I'll stay within the same like zone of my cloud situation, rather than having to like look around everywhere. So you have a little bit more intelligence built into it, because of course, it incurs the cost of time and money to go hunt around for something.
Yeah. So this is when we talk about running at scale, and we have a lot of customers that do, and you start talking about, you know, lots of microservices being chatty on the network, anything you can do to just like reduce network latency is good, right? And especially to this feature in general, right? Was, you know, built for some of our very larger customers. They were actually in the business of like, they're basically building out their own clouds, right? Like, you know, with, you know, VMware technologies, and they have multiple, you know, they're doing the whole multiple zones in the metro area, and they got, you know, dark fiber running everywhere and all that, you know, basically what the cloud providers do to actually build availability zones. So they're doing that themselves, and they wanted, you know, they wanted that Go router to act, you know, accordingly. So yeah, this is definitely network latency optimization, you know, at its finest. And I saw a demo of this not too long ago, but it was pretty nice to see. Like, yeah, you don't want, you know, if you have, you know, typically a Cloud Foundry deployment or TAS deployment will, you know, at a minimum be deployed across three AZs, like the full deployment for, you know, Quorum. And if you lose a zone, you still have two up, everything's happy, that type of thing. And you having, you know, obviously too, when you have some of this, you're going to have, you know, external load balancers or like, you know, things ingressing from the internet coming down into your network and then routing to the Go routers. You don't want those Go routers necessarily going across a link to go to a different building to hit that. You want the all that traffic to stay in that same physical location and, you know, as close as possible, just to eliminate hops and things like that. So
now for your you run your own of course.
Yes.
Cloud Foundry cloud. Like, yes. Do you have like multiple zones in like your office? Then you've got like the guest bedroom, then maybe the garage.
Well, I mean,
you can start to control where the traffic goes now. Yes. Let's keep it out of the guest bathroom.
Yes. Well,
not secure over there. Let's keep it here quite. In my office.
Not quite, but you're giving me ideas, right?
I mean, that would be a great demo, right? Like if the traffic goes here in the, in the living room, the light turns green.
Yeah.
So you can see now the light is not green because the traffic is staying here in my office.
Now, that would be a pretty good demo, but I don't think my wife would appreciate me building more zones in her house.
Maybe the zones could just be the corners of your office.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, lots of cables everywhere. But yeah. Uh-huh. So I guess on that note too, I simulate availability zones on a single vSphere cluster with host groups, right? Which is another kind of I guess potential reference architecture. Obviously it's not the most ideal way, but if you are running let's just say on Nick's money versus you know, enterprise money, it is a way to kind of achieve that too. But
yeah, using the old Nick script.
Yeah. Now I guess another thing too, while we're talking about that, we've had this thing called the small runtime for Tains Application Service or Cloud Foundry for quite some time. And, you know, we would get a lot of, I guess, I don't know, flack or whatever, grief that, you know, the default, you know, full installation, and I can't remember the exact number, but it's like 20 some VMs because it's assuming you're doing a 3 AZ deployment. My database is replicated across them. It's like a full HA. Like, I can rebuild this thing on the fly. It's not going to go down. Everything's going to be like resilient, right? And that's great and all, but then we're starting to, see potentially, like, what if we had small footprint and then wanted to become full, right? The hydrate to the full install. Well, that typically before was, if you installed small footprint, then you'd have to do like a full reinstall to go to the full, the large TAS or like the fully HA resilient TAS type of thing, multi AZ. And now that we actually support a path, right, where you can go from small to, I guess, like, I don't know, proper TAS, but without doing a full reinstall. Now, that to say, there's nothing really wrong with the small footprint. We were actually having some conversations earlier this week about, you know, customers using that for, you know, let's call them like edge locations, right? Where they just want, they have limited, resources or capacity at each site. They want to, you know, deploy a small runtime TAS and some data services and kind of have like a little micro cloud or whatever, you know, fully PaaS, you know, baked into their kind of edge location without, having to deploy a lot of things. Right. So that's a use case. We use it internally a lot. I use it. I've got like at least 3 small runtimes in my home lab right now. I have a full runtime as well. I think I'm up to four Cloud Foundry installs in my basement right now. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess I'll keep adding more. I don't know if I'll ever stop, but Eventually, I'll run out of capacity.
But one day, if you get acquired by a larger Nick,
yeah,
they might need to scale up.
Yeah.
Those various instances to handle the demand, yeah. The workloads.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. Like you might end up with like suddenly like 30 family members you need to take care of.
Whoa,
you need a bigger. Yeah. Well, this is an amalgamation. It's not okay, just you. Okay. You know,
yeah,
right, it's a conglomerate.
Yeah.
Yes, but you're going to need a bigger Cloud Foundry base.
Yeah. Yes.
So
yeah.
You need a path to upgrade it without having to rebuild everything.
Yeah, and that's where I would go the multi AZ route, right? I'd have to move some out to the garage and everything, right? Yeah. Kind of, I don't know if you've seen Silicon Valley, but that reminds me of the scene where they're launching whatever service at the time, and they start like hacking through the wall to run cables to it because they needed some kind of emergency type of thing. But I guess if you haven't seen the show Silicon Valley, it's quite funny. Get to that episode, you'll get what I'm talking about. Let's see. What's another fun thing to talk about? Oh, yes, the Dopplers and traffic controllers. So, yeah, this is all kind of in the same vein, right? So, there's been a lot of work over the past, however many releases to optimize how much, let's say the full TAS or proper TAS uses resources wise. So there's been a re-architecture from like the logging and metrics infrastructure going on. And we had these things called Dopplers and traffic controllers. And it was kind of this large kind of back-end system that took all the logs from all the apps in the platform and aggregated it all together. And then typically you'd hook up what you call a fire hose, right? Fire hose of logs, hook up a fire hose to that stream and then like blast it out to some other thing to collect and potentially just demolish whatever logging platform of choice that you had, right? But that was a great way to aggregate all the logs, and then you'd have nozzles from all your foundations, they all go there, and then you could say like, hey, this is where developers see all their logs from all their places, that type of thing. It's a typical aggregate the logs and metrics and put them into log aggregation type of thing. Yeah. Right?
I mean, listen, we know everyone loves logs. Yeah. So there's a lot of attention paid to that. Everyone loves a log.
Yeah. And logs are important for troubleshooting and potentially compliance and security, that type of thing. So anywho, that whole architecture has been getting rebuilt over time, where a lot of that's getting then, let's just say, distributed down to the Diego cells. And then as of like 6.0, right, you can scale your Dopplers and traffic controllers to zero because you have like machine sets within TAS or Cloud Foundry and groupings, and you don't essentially have to run those instance groups, assuming, right, you're using the aggregate syslog drains to consume both logs and metrics, and that will send those via just normal syslog to that endpoint. And you can potentially reduce. You won't have to run the fire hose nozzles, and you won't need to run your Dopplers or traffic controllers. So that's just one way to potentially, save costs, because some of our larger customers, this infrastructure is quite large because they have many many applications that send lots of logs. So anything we could do to basically eliminate the middleman there and optimize that path for a little bit infrastructure savings, I think will go a long way. Now, we need to, note, right? If you are still using nozzles for some, other third-party integration, you're going to have to keep those traffic controllers and Dopplers there until you fully migrate off the nozzles. And then we do have, additional tiles like HealthWatch and AppMetrics. They are working on migrating as well. So I think in like upcoming releases, those will fully adopt this as well to help do some of that as well. So that's the thing. But if you're just using kind of like your vanilla TAS install or Cloud Foundry install, and if you migrate off the nozzles, you can do this and be on your way.
You're saying the theme of very large scale installs. There's mm-hmm. new things you start adding after a while.
Yes. Yeah. And then when you have many of these instances and you have you know, they could be, you know, 10s, 20s, 30s, 40s of VMs per foundation just because it's so big. That could be some significant infrastructure savings along the line, so to speak. All right. We are 56 minutes in. We typically try to wrap about an hour. What do you?
We can do it.
We can do it. Yeah. Do we, should we cover one more thing, perhaps?
Yeah. Let's see. What's a good toe? Oh well. Yeah. There's a bunch of a couple of security things.
Security. That's nice. Security is good.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. We'll combine a few things together.
Okay.
I mean, there's several security related things, but then there's also you got some FIPS compliance here, which I think that's a government specified thing, if I remembered. And then also there's AWS GovCloud support. So it sounds like perhaps some government users of TAS here, they're going to get some stuff that will help them out.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. If you are, I think there are only a certain group of people who can use the AWS GovCloud regions. You're in the, let's just say, the federal space. So yeah, that the cloud service broker for AWS, which is a great extension of the marketplace, where you can easily have that, you know, Cloud Foundry Marketplace TAS experience, just go and provision like S3 buckets and things like that for you, and just wire that up like a traditional service binding. That's all. Those regions are now supported with the broker. So if you're in those regions, you can start using the cloud service broker. So that's good. And then like in the FIPS compliance themselves, so that's we're calling this early access, right? Because we're rolling this out, and I think one of the, you know, to be like fully FIPS compliant or to really have any kind of certification, like the entity like running it all, right, needs to do a lot of different things with every different piece of technology they use. But getting our stem cells or our OS images to be FIPS compliant, that was a big step in that direction. We could probably double click on this a little bit more. I know we have in a later session we're gonna be talking with one of the TAS product managers, Kathy Cook, and she's PM for this feature explicitly, so we can maybe deep dive into compliance and things of that nature too. But you know, we have a lot of federal customers, and we're meeting some federal requirements, let's just say. So that's the recap of those.
And then the Tanzu Application Service Cloud Foundry benefit here would be that, like, if you got your existing apps and you add some new sort of compliance or functionality to the OS level, like, you don't, I mean, maybe sometimes it happens depending on how you do things, but like in theory, you can just rebuild your apps and not have to like mess with the developers and have them do things, because you can swap out the layer of the operating system. So it's a lot easier to just like upgrade your apps in production. You don't need to spend a lot of time.
Right.
Yeah. Worrying about just, that. The nature of how Cloud Foundry builds and deploys your apps and runs them and everything.
Yeah. It's all behind the scenes to developer, kind of fully automated behind the scenes. And potentially the developer wouldn't even know what was happening. It's just happening for them. So great for that overall developer experience. All right. Well, let's see. I think we're the live chat's been a little quiet today, but we're at we're at 56 today.
It's just because you've been hanging on. Thorough.
Yeah.
You know, people don't know what to say when you're covering all their questions.
Yeah.
Well, so I always think it's good to end. Like, so how do people get it, Nick? Like, they love this stuff. They're like, I got to upgrade. What do they do?
Well, you can go, some of our customers have a kind of fully automated, I think the term is autonomous pipelines, where they can choose to pull this release from TanzuNet in their concourse pipelines or platform automation, that type of thing. So they can consume it just like they consume any other TAS release. You can go to Tanzu Network and pull that and download those bits as well, manually if you want to do that as well. I have the link there too to get the blog. I guess another thing too, if you like what we're doing with this Gen AI updates and beta, we have a sign up to get access to those bits. as well. So sign up for the beta if you want to learn more about what we're doing with that. And I think that's a wrap here. I think it was pretty good. I think we're running out of things in the box to take out. I've torn off the packaging off everything, and just ready to play with at this point, right?
It just smells like us now. That nice factory smell has escaped the room now.
And then also,
I mean, anyone who's watched this far into the video, like, and they don't know about it yet, there's Cloud Foundry Day North America.
Oh, yes. Good call.
May 15th, 2024, mm-hmm. which you would probably be interested in going to that over there. It's in New York, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. So you'll be speaking there, Nick, and some other people from the Cloud Foundry community. I went to the one in Germany last year. It was great. It was good stuff. But you should check that out, the Cloud Foundry Day.
Yeah. Check it out. Register, sign up. And we'll hopefully see you there. And then I guess in the two, I don't know if you made it this far in the show, Cote, but we like to end the show with a sign off. We just say, we say CF bye or CF goodbye, and then we'll see you next time. Oh, on that note, I forgot the show next week. Our guest next week, are Ram and Chris from the Cloud Foundry Foundation. So we're going to get an update where we'll talk to them to hear about everything happening within the Cloud Foundry Foundation. I suspect we'll get a very thorough deep dive of what they have planned for Cloud Foundry Day New York City as well. So, catch next week's episode to learn more about the overall Cloud Foundry Foundation updates. There's various projects we have going on there. And then obviously here are the scoop, so to speak, on Cloud Foundry Day. But anywho, I think we're all, I'm ready to sign off here.
Well, thanks for having me. It was fun to host with you here.
Yeah,
I like the all the show episodes. They're fun to watch. Good job on coming up with a new format and whatever you call this stream,
podcast stream, etc. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, CF bye.
CF so long.
Oh. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Cloud Foundry Weekly. Feel free to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or check us out at cloudfoundryweekly.com. Thank you.